Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views. They're the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being because we have with us a very special guest this evening. His name is John Stormer. You may remember the voice from the past. In 1964, John wrote a book called None Dare Call It Treason that played a very important part in the effort to elect Barry Goldwater to the presidency, get him nominated, and, of course, get him elected. Of course, Barry Goldwater lost the war, but John Stormer's book touched the lives of literally millions of people. There were, how many copies of that book went out, John?
Over 7 million of the original.
Over 7 million of the original. That's been updated now to None Dare Call It Treason 25 years later. And, of course, John has a new book out. It's called None Dare Call It Education. A number of videos. In fact, we'll be talking about one of them this evening. It has to do with the godly history, a godly foundation of America. What's the title of that one?
Well, we look at the biblical basis for the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution.
Well, I thought we'd talk about that tonight because, of course, people have to understand that at one time everybody knew America was a Christian nation. Not that everybody was a Christian here, but that America was founded on godly principles and the founding fathers, and certainly 200 years ago, why, when you talked about God, you were talking about Jesus Christ, with very, very few exceptions. The leaders of this country, the men who created it, were coming from a Christian worldview. And even though some of them weren't Christians, they were still coming from a Christian worldview because their views, the attitudes towards these concepts of freedom were based upon biblical principles. So I'm going to let you go ahead and tell the story of the biblical foundation of the Declaration of Independence and this country, a story which is being actively, intentionally and maliciously deleted from our schools today. So you pick up the story.
Well, the thing that makes America different than any other nation in history was the concept that our founding fathers discovered and set forth in the Declaration of Independence when they said, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, including life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And to make these rights secure, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed." Now, there's several very important concepts there. The idea that our rights came from God, and secondly, that to secure those rights or make those rights secure, they instituted a government, and that government was, of course, the Constitution of the United States. Now, if you get that down and get the comprehension of that, it brings a very important question that we just don't hear today. If our rights come from God and the Constitution was written to make those rights secure, how could any judge or court find in that Constitution the right to abort babies or distribute pornography or have same-sex marriages or a whole lot of other things that would violate? They find rights there to do things that God would never have given.
Of course, but of course, the people who took God out of our school did it because they wanted to destroy the Christian foundation of this nation and convert us from a Christian nation to a godless nation and ultimately into the pagan nation that we've become today.
And I think the thing that we have to realize is, now, for example, the English have many of the same rights that we do, and they trace the source of their rights back to the year 1215, when a group of English nobles met King John on the battlefield at Runnymede, And when old John felt the point of those noble swords at his throat, he said, "Give me that paper and I'll sign it." Now, the problem was that for the next 500 years, whenever a king felt he had more swords than the nobles, he'd take the rights back. If a king gives the rights, if a government gives the rights, even if a constitution gives rights, it can be taken away. And out of that turmoil over those almost 500 years, men started to, of course, the printing press was invented, and the Bible started to be translated into the language of people, and the Reformation came, and people came anew and afresh to the realization that salvation comes through faith in Jesus Christ and not through our works. And then they started to look at the Bible and see that it taught how to bring up your kids and order your family and your finances. And then for about 100 years, people in France and England and the United States started to raise the question and study the Bible to say, what does the Bible say? What would be God's order in government? And out of it came the Declaration of Independence and those tremendous words, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, among these life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, and to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed." And as you indicated, I haven't been able to find a public school textbook. In fact, I can't even find any Christian school textbooks that teach young people what makes us different, the source of our rights.
You quote in your video, Houghton Mifflin textbook that had quoted the beginning of the Declaration of Independence, or the second paragraph of the Declaration of Independence, and then just sort of put four little dots in there. And leave out seven words. What seven words? What did they say, and what words did they leave out?
They said that all men are created equal with certain inalienable rights. All men are created equal, dot, 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 with certain inalienable rights.
Of course. And that,
leaving out the seven words endowed by their Creator. And that's important because, of course, everybody thinks they have rights. But if the rights come from God, that might put some limits on the kind of rights, number one, and it would also make us realize that we're going to be accountable to God for how we utilize and use those rights. And that's been wiped out today. We don't see it in our textbooks. We don't see it. Even the legal profession. I've been doing a survey for the last two and a half years. Asking every judge and every attorney that I meet, and I'm up well over 100. I think that a number of judges, including, I believe, three or four Supreme Court judges, not Washington judges, but state Supreme Court judges, when I've had an occasion to meet with them, talk with them, and I usually say, when you were in law school, you took a course in constitutional law, and a lot of them groan and say, yeah, and say the book was that thick. And I say, now my question is this. And then I pull my Constitution out of my pocket. I carry one all the time. And I say, when you were in law school and you took your course in constitutional law, did you actually read and study the Constitution itself, or did you just study Supreme Court decisions which told you what to believe about it? And I see a puzzled look come on their face, and out of the more than 100, I've only found two people who said, I actually read and studied the Constitution itself in law school. Incidentally, one of them went to Oral Roberts, and one of them went to Regent, and they both had the same constitutional law professor, Herb Titus. Incidentally, one of those ladies, Michelle Bachman, is serving in the Minnesota Senate now, and the other one just finished 10 years, was termed out of the Missouri Senate. They went on and implemented what they learned in law school.
But you know, the great difficulty is, John, that people are not learning the Constitution. We're really working with a fellow named Mike Perutka back in Annapolis, Maryland, and he's putting on Institutes of the Constitution using John Eidsmoe's training technique, really on the Christian foundation of our Constitution. And any of our listeners out there who are interested in starting an Institute of the Constitution in your community, you let us know, because these are being set up all across America. They're sort of springing up like mushrooms. And let me tell you, I'm encouraged, because if people don't understand what we believe in, how can they possibly oppose what's happening today? If they did understand our Constitution, the American people would rise up with their righteous indignation and demand the impeachment of our president for signing the USA Patriot Act.
Dr. Stan, that's exactly right. And what you say about the Perucas and the Institute on the Constitution, the last two and a half years, as I've been speaking on this, well, every time I get an opportunity to be in a church, I usually say whatever they ask me to come to do, to preach in the morning service, to deal with some issues on Sunday night on education or family life or whatever, I say, well, I'll come if I'm allowed to teach a combined teen-adult Sunday school class in the morning Sunday school. And usually agree to that. And I make the presentation that the biblical basis for the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. And people come, I've had men come with tears in their eyes and say, why wasn't I ever taught this in school? And after the first time I did that, actually, it was to a Christian teacher convention in New York, and I asked the question. There were about 200 teachers there, and I said, "How many of you have read the Constitution in the last 2 years?" And two people out of the 200 had raised their hands. I didn't want to really embarrass them and say, "How many of you ever really read it?" But at the end of the meeting, people just swarmed around and said, where'd you get that little red book? Why don't you sell them? Well, I've got some now, and I think I've probably distributed over 2,000 copies of the Constitution, a nice little book with the Declaration of Independence and the amendments. There's a hunger out there. People are realizing they don't know the basis of our government, and that's why we're losing it.
And, of course, it's been an organized, orchestrated effort, and this is financed by our great tax-exempt foundations, the Rockefellers, the Fords, the Carnegies. Many of the foundations set up many years ago to rewrite our textbooks and to eliminate any knowledge of the Christian foundation of this nation and the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution for our people. Because if you don't know what you stand for, you don't know where you came from, you certainly don't know where you're going.
The dean of the Harvard Law School back in about 1920 wrote a book, and in it he said, the state will replace Jehovah.
And that was Roscoe Pound, wasn't
it? That's exactly right.
Right. Well, there have been a lot of people who hated America, who hated this idea of freedom. They're an elitist. They have a hatred of God. They believe that man can bring a kingdom of heaven to earth without God. But first of all, they have to destroy this realization, this understanding, which was so prevalent among the founding fathers of our society, of this great nation, that America was a Christian nation. And it was founded by Christians on Christian principles. And it
that's
was founded on a belief
blessed.
In God.
That's why we've become the greatest nation in the world, because the Scripture says, blessed is the nation whose God is the Lord.
And what happens to a nation, though, that turns its back on the Lord?
Well, Deuteronomy 8 has some very strong warnings about that. If we forget the source of our blessings and think we've done it, we're going to lose it all.
And, of course, when the World Trade Center came down, you heard these people saying, boy, we're going to build a new building. It's going to be bigger and stronger and greater than ever before. And, boy, what are we going to do? And where were the people asking, why did God allow this to happen? Has God beginning to send us a warning? Is God perhaps letting us understand that this is the beginning of the end if there's not repentance? And maybe for a day or so there is even a sense of repentance. But that was replaced by patriotism, but patriotism and belief in what? A belief in this is a nation created by God and blessed by God, or boy, are we pretty smart and strong, and we're the biggest, strongest bully on the block, and we can force any country to bend to our will, and if we don't, we'll just blanket their streets with carpet bombs. And really, I think what's so frightening today is that so many people seem to go along with that rather than asking for God's forgiveness for the sins of this country, and of course, understanding that God, they took God and prayer out of our schools intentionally, and exposing the wicked men who did that and why they did it. And none of our leaders will ever tell us why. Our ministers won't tell us why. Well, other than, of course, present company accepted, for people who don't know, John Stormer is a minister of the gospel, and he's retired at the present time, probably working harder than when he had his own church, because I know he's traveling so much of the time today. Well, John, you know, the message that you have, you know, of the fact that, you know, the whole concept is, blessed is the nation whose God is the Lord. You know, at one time, everybody understood that our blessings, our prosperity, our freedom came from God. And now people just take it for granted, don't they?
Right. And you know, something that I try to do in that videotape, that's, this presentation I make that's been put on video, you know, people, a very great book that I disagreed with in only one area, Henry Grady Weaver wrote a book back in 1946 called The Mainspring of Human Progress.
That was a great book.
It was a great book, but there was one chapter in it that it wasn't written. He recognized the nature of man. The thing that motivates man is self-interest, and the profit and so forth. Anybody who would ever read that could never think that socialism could ever work. But one of the chapters in the book, he said that back there about 3,500 years ago, Moses and a group of men got together and come up with a code that would cause an orderly society. And then they said, how are we ever going to get men to believe it? And somebody finally said, well, let's tell them God told us.
Well, you know, of course, the thing is that this book is circulated by the Ayn Rand people, who believe, of course, in freedom, but, of course, they base their freedom upon no philosophical basis other than men should be free, and men should have a right to do what they want to. And of course, if you have a society where people are free without restraints placed on them by God, you end up with social anarchy.
That's right.
And of course, that was basically what the serpent preached in the Garden of Eden: do what thou wilt.
Right.
You know, you are the determinant of what's right and wrong.
And, you know, the question is that a lot of people will say, well, I think God would have us to do this or that. But is this truth that's in the Declaration of Independence actually biblical? And we try to show that, for example, life. In Genesis 2:7, the scripture says that God formed Adam out of the dust of the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life. And in 2 Corinthians 3, tells us, now the Lord is that Spirit, and where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty. I like the word liberty a lot better than freedom. But and the pursuit of happiness, there's, in Ecclesiastes 3, Solomon said that the right to be, eat, drink, and be merry is a gift of God. And then you go from there, and I say, where does it say in the Bible that you shall have freedom of speech? And I haven't had anybody yet that was able to answer that question. But what did the Declaration say? It says we hold these truths to be what? Self-evident. And we go through and try to spell out and show that, for example, the Lord Jesus said, go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature, and he that believeth and is baptized shall be saved, he that believeth not shall be damned. Now, he wouldn't tell us to go and do something unless he gave us the right to do it. The same way the freedom of assembly that we find in the First Amendment to the Constitution. The Lord says in the Word, forsake not the assembling of yourselves together as the manner of some is. When the church is open, we ought to be there. He wouldn't tell us to do something that he wouldn't give us the right. It's self-evident that he gave us the right to do it. Freedom of religion, freedom of the press. Then the Second Amendment, the freedom to keep and bear arms. In Luke 22:35-36, just before the Lord went to the cross, he told them, if you don't have a sword, sell your coat to get one. Means of defense. So the Second Amendment has a biblical basis. It's interesting whenever I present that in a meeting group of conservatives, at that point all the men get their pen out and write down the scripture reference. But the Fifth Amendment to the Constitution that forbids that we can't force somebody to testify against themselves. We're one of the few countries that have that sort of protection.
But of course, all of this was really aimed at trying to limit the power of government, because our founding fathers realized that you could never trust government with power, and the only way you could ever have freedom was to, or liberty, was to limit the power of government. Who do we have calling in today?
This is Susan.
Hi, Susan. How are you?
Fine. How are you guys?
I'm doing fine. Where are you calling from?
Santa Cruz.
Okay. Good to have you. Have a question or comment?
Yeah. I think you said that God endowed man with these gifts, right?
That's the Declaration of Independence. That's what the Declaration says.
All right. Well, what would you say? Would you say that women are equally endowed with that gift from God?
Yes.
Liberty? Yes.
Okay. So they're equally deserving in every way of these rights.
Right.
So, therefore, what would you say to somebody that was fighting for liberty but didn't believe women should vote?
All right. Well, why don't you answer that one, John?
Okay. The declaration that spells out all men are created equal, so forth, and even some of the men who wrote that own slaves, for example, and as you correctly point out, they did not give women the right to vote, and so forth. Now, they discovered a truth, but it took them, 100 years before Abraham Lincoln's basis during his debates with Douglas starting in 1858 when he ran for the Senate in Illinois and lost was that based on the truth in the Declaration of Independence, all men are equal and men have no right to make slaves out of other men. So the truth was there, it just was not fully applied until men came along a little further than they were when they wrote the truth. But they discovered truth, and sometimes we all have truth that we just don't necessarily apply immediately.
Right, I understand that. I find, though, even specifically with Christian men, sometimes they don't believe women should vote at this present time. What would you say to somebody at this present time that believes that?
What would you say, John?
Well,
I need some help.
All right. Well,
I have heard this concept expressed that if a home is organized in the way it should, that there should be agreement there, and that the man can express the view for the family. Now, that's not our law, and you find a lot of people that husband and wife cancel out one another's votes sometimes. And if it were not for the good ladies of this country that are out fulfilling citizenship responsibilities, we'd be in a lot worse shape than we're in now. And one of the questions I get as I travel the country and have an opportunity to speak to women's groups on occasion, I'll get specific, state conventions of Phyllis Schlafly's Eagle Forum in Alabama and Texas, and I'll be in Indiana in a couple of weeks, and the question I get continually is, where are the men? Why are we having to do this? Why aren't the men out there defending our freedom and trying to make our government what it should be?
You must be drinking fluoridated water, but go ahead. Susan, I think you have to understand the thought process initially. And I think ideas change with the passage of time. But initially, the last thing they wanted was people voting for much of anything. That's why we did not elect our senators initially. They were to be elected by the certainly by the individual state legislatures. They wanted
they were to represent the state.
They were to represent the state.
And the House was to represent the people.
The last thing they wanted was a democracy in America, because when they had knew what had happened in ancient Greece, they knew what had happened in Rome, as Rome had gone from being a republic to becoming a democracy, to becoming a dictatorship. And of course, as Plato had written, democracies always a descent into despotism. So the last thing that they wanted was a democratic form of government with everybody voting. That's why they left it up to the individual states, and why many of the states required you had to own property before you could vote for property taxes or anything else, because after all, if everybody could just vote for whatever they wanted to, pretty soon people would vote the property away from the property class. So the whole idea was to limit the power of authority by the government so that men could be as free as possible in a structured society. Now, certainly today we would say, well, this was unfair as far as women were concerned. And the great tragedy is today, as I look out across America, and I go to a lot of the meetings with Christian leaders, and there are two people I respect whenever I have an idea and I find myself in disagreement with them, I reevaluate my thoughts. And one of them is John Stormer, and the other is Phyllis Schlafly. And I look upon Phyllis as one of the great leaders of our nation today. So I don't think anybody today could very well justify, taking the vote away from women. And I will tell you one thing. If men, only men should vote, look at the mess we're in today. And look where men have led us today, because it seems that the men of today have lost their character and integrity, and they are no longer really exerting their authority as the head of the family. And of course, the family, of course, should be answerable to God, and the families aren't answerable to God. That's why half of our marriages today end up in divorce, in Christian homes.
Yeah. There really isn't that many families organized in that manner, so I don't think that really holds up. It's not really appropriate at this time to say that every family has to be unified and vote one way.
But you see, at one time, it was, at least theoretically it was.
Yeah.
This is no longer, that's when we were a Christian country.
Right.
We are no longer a Christian country.
So it doesn't really apply, that reasoning. And I can't think of any other justified reasoning based on gender that I could say today that would mean women should not vote. I wanted to hear what you guys thought about that.
Well, I stand in favor of women voting. How about you, John?
Yes.
Okay. There you have it.
That was a little hesitant there, John.
Well, I don't usually say it, but my wife kind of feels that she's even more conservative than I am, and she has been known to say that the country started downhill when women got the right to vote.
But, and what is her reasoning for that?
Because they brought in FDR.
She just looks at where we've come since 1920 in moving away from where we should be, although she's very active and very well informed and votes very conscientiously.
Yeah,
okay,
thanks.
We're going to go on to something else, Susan.
Okay.
Thank you very much for calling. Okay.
Bye. That was a good call.
It really was. And Susan's a nice person. And, the trouble is that at one time men understood that this was a Christian nation. At one time, men were willing to take a position of leadership and stand up for what was righteous. And tragically, as we've moved from a Christian to a post-Christian to an atheist to a pagan nation, that really is no longer the case. And, of course, we have become, really, for all intents and purposes, a democracy. And, of course, it's step by step by step. Knowing full well where this was end, the people have been manipulating behind the scenes, have changed the very structure of our society away from what it was to what they wanted to be. And that was a society ruled by a ruling elite, and, of course, where most people, you don't even understand the biblical foundation of our once great Constitution. Well, we're going to be back here in just 3 minutes. Our guest this evening is John Stormer. When we get back, we'll tell you how to get in touch with Mr. Stormer and how to get his material. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when we want to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported. And if you're out there in the listening audience and you agree with us, we hope that you'll want to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's how we're able to do what we do 5 hours every day. And whether it be on radio or the internet, 5 hours or 3 hours on satellite, 2 hours on shortwave, we have a unique opportunity to reach people and through our network of stations that we've been able to put together. Why, we're heard on almost 50 stations every week, and certainly with all the outlets, the shortwave and internet and satellites, we are heard on over 50 different outlets. So what an exciting thing it is to be able to bring ideas to people across America. We just need to expand that, and instead of being on 50, to be on 500 or 5,000 stations. Because when people hear the truth, they recognize it, but quite frankly, we can't do that by ourselves. I mean, I'm amazed that, well, I don't really even feel that we've done what we have on ourselves. I feel that if the Lord weren't with us, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing. And, I mean, I could tell you some of the most amazing things that have happened since we started radio. I mean, things that just could not have happened by accident. There had to be the Lord blessing what we were doing. So if you believe that there's a problem and you'd like to become part of our team, it's a very simple matter to pick up your telephone and call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And just tell the lady there you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And, of course, you can get a free copy of our newsletter. Our December newsletter deals with the occult history of our nation's financial system. Now, when you say occult history, what are you talking about? Well, you're going to have to read the letter to understand what we're saying. In fact, I learned a lot writing the letter. I learn a lot every time I do write a newsletter. It helps to crystallize ideas and pulling all the various facts together. And suddenly when you begin to see them there forming on the computer screen, why, you begin to realize certain facts that really it been totally unaware of before. So I think you'll enjoy our December newsletter, and give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And ask for a copy of the December newsletter. If you haven't had one before, we'll be glad to send you one free of charge. And then, of course, we hope you'll go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. And that you'll pull down our programs there. You're welcome to copy any of the programs that you can. And there are ways to do that. You have to have special software to be able to pull down all live audio programs, but you actually can pull them down if you know what software to use. And if you have any questions, you can always talk to my son, who is a computer whiz. I know very little about it, but he really understands it, and he, of course, puts up our website. And then, of course, we encourage you to pull down our newsletters and to copy them and to circulate them, and you have our permission to copy and circulate anything we've produced, because we want to get the word out as far and wide as we can. So again, our telephone number, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, our website, www.radioliberty.com. And, of course, our telephone number, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because we truly are at war today. Well, our guest is this evening is John Stormer, and of course he's got a number of books, and his book, None Dare Call It Treason, 25 years later, None Dare Call It Education, his videos. John, how can people get in touch with you?
Well, the best way is just through my Liberty Bell Press, Post Office Box 32 in Florissant, Missouri, 63032. If they have any of my books, that address is there. You mentioned the two books, and Radio Liberty makes those available, and I would encourage anybody that wants None Dare Call It Treason 25 years later, or None Dare Call It Education. They know how to get in touch with you, and that helps support your broadcast.
Well, I appreciate that very much, and we do actually
videos,
carry both. Right, go ahead.
The videos, I have three videos right now. The one we've been talking about, the biblical basis of the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. It's well-researched, it's well-produced, it's been professionally done. Runs about 45 minutes. The second one is The War Against Our Culture Through the Schools. It starts out with a letter that a fourth grade teacher in a public school down south of St. Louis wrote just about a year ago, and she was responding to all this testing they're doing, that they base how well the schools are doing. And she said, she wrote to her superintendent and said, your letter on telling us how to help the kids was good, but I think the state misses this. Here's my class this year. And she went down through and detailed all these little fourth grade kids from all sorts of broken homes and with drug busts in their homes. And one that just tears me up, the little boy that his father gets them every weekend, and they have to swap the kids at the police station because the dad's under a court restraining order for beating up the mother. And she goes through, and over half her class is this sort of situation. And I've shown this letter to public school teachers in various parts of the country. Many of them read partway through and start to cry and say, I could write this letter. We don't realize. Now, the public schools have a lot of shortcomings and a lot of failings, but there are a lot of dedicated people there trying. But with kids with this sort of turmoil, the best teacher in the world has difficulty. And, of course, how did this all come about? It's the result of what they've done through the schools over the last 50 or 60 years, undermining marriage, undermining concepts of right and wrong, understanding government, and all the rest.
And, of course, just taking out any mention of God and turning these kids into the atheists, destroying their belief that God did create the heaven and the earth.
We detail it there, and it's something that really I think that some of your listeners, if they know a public school teacher or a school board member, get them to look at the video, and I think at that point they'll want to read and under call it education. Then the third video I have is what are the dead communists doing in the world today? And we look at some of the things we've talked about on some other broadcasts with you. How this fellow Vladimir Putin, the president of Russia, he says he never left the Communist Party. He was the head of the KGB, and he's reinstituting a communist dictatorship in Russia.
With our full financial support.
With our full financial support. And Mr. Clinton went and met with him and said, I looked into his eyes, and he is a man that I believe is totally trustworthy. And Mr. Bush went over, and he came back and said, I looked into his eyes and saw deep into his soul and saw that he's a good man who's trustworthy. And we're being put to sleep. And in that video, I show how our leaders are just selling us out and ask the question, why? And there's a good biblical reason there why our leaders are betraying us, apart from, and there are conspiracies, no question about it. But a lot of good people get themselves blinded because of where we are. Well, it comes down to a passage in Isaiah that says, because we honor him with our lips and our hearts are far from him, he's going to take away the wisdom of our wise men. Now, those videos are $20 a piece, or you can have all three of them for $15 a piece, $45. And anybody that buys them, I have a free bonus video. Boy, this gets involved. But about a year ago, 20-some armed policemen raided a Christian boarding school in northeast Missouri and carried away 115 crying, screaming, troubled kids. And there were two amateur videos made of it, and they took the videos and they showed them to the federal judge, and he said, what we saw happened there, he said, could have been filmed in a totalitarian country. And in his official order, he said, when I watched this in my courtroom, he said, I had to turn away and watch it on a separate monitor so the people in my courtroom couldn't see my emotional response. And this thing is still, I mean, it's embattled, but there's about 17 minutes there of these kids being picked up and carried away, screaming, hollering by social services people, juvenile authorities, under a court order. Then the sheriff and the highway patrol come in and enforced it all. It's a shocking thing. It's one of the most shocking things I've ever seen. And we supply that free as a bonus to anybody that buys the other videos.
Well, you know, I think that really the story is amazing because this is a school that was formed by a very, very wealthy man who had, you know, given up the pursuits of gaining more money, and had set up a school for children.
And these were troubled kids.
And these were kids, you know, they're on the way to penitentiaries. They're kids that couldn't be controlled by their parents. And they couldn't be controlled by the school. They're thrown out of schools, thrown out of, on the way to in and out of detention school, in and out of the prisons. And of course, here in a structured environment with people who looked after them and loved them and taught them Bible and enforced discipline, these kids' lives were turned around. It was a wonderful, wonderful experience. But, of course, there are people in government who don't want solutions. All they want is problems. And so there, a couple of the children were being grossly abused. They were being required to shovel manure in the barn. Based upon that, why they brought these charges of child abuse against the school. And, of course, this is really because of the anti-Christian bias and the hatred of a program that is really changing and transforming children's lives that they brought about this raid. Wouldn't that be a pretty good estimate of what it was?
Yeah, one of the psychiatrists gave expert testimony in court, and he said, I'm familiar. In fact, he's from San Francisco, so he's not from the right-wing Midwest. He said, I have observed social services programs, government programs all over America, and I haven't seen any one of them that accomplishes what this school was accomplishing through Christian love. And he said, no, I have no Christian bias. I'm Jewish. But he said, I'm amazed at what went on here. And the tragedy is, I just talked to one of the key attorneys the other night, and this all happened a year and 2 months ago, and the judge ordered that the kids could come back, and a number of them did get back, but some of them got free. Three of those 115 kids that were picked up and carried off into protective custody, three of them that did not come back to school have already committed suicide. These are deeply troubled kids.
But you see, the social service really doesn't care whether they commit suicide. And the one thing they want to do is protect them from those wicked Christians. And it is this anti-Christian bias, this hatred of Christianity on the part of the wicked people that, of course, promotes something like this. And, you know, of course, fortunately, the man who had the farm actually was fairly well-to-do, and he could put out a great deal of money to defend himself. The jury was out for 18 minutes.
Right.
Back then with an innocent plea, and of course the judge at that point told social service never again to do something like this, and they're appealing it, and you must have a pretty corrupt and crummy state attorney general there.
We do. Well, he's not someone that we like very well.
Well, I think that what you have to understand, if you're out there in the listening audience, this sort of thing we have all across the country today. Because the wicked people are willing to commit themselves and work full-time to get into positions of power. And the Christian people say, well, gee, we're not perfect, so why should we be critical of what's going on in government?
This isn't on the tape that we supply, but I have seen taped interviews with the kids done about 6 months later. Some of the kids that were taken in and put in a juvenile home, and the social workers come in and say, boy, they really brainwash you up there. They abused you, didn't? No, they loved us. What? They just taught us the Bible. And social workers said, you believe that book? You're crazy. They've got you real brainwashed.
Right.
And having said that, I want to make it plain. There are a lot of dedicated people who are in child welfare services and so forth. They'd have to be to work for what they're being worked at. But there's also a lot of very mixed-up people in there. In many cases, there's some indications that some of these welfare workers were people that were abused as kids themselves, and they tend to believe that every adult, every authority figure is an abuser. And we had a special Senate committee established, and they held hearings all over the state on the foster care situation, and they looked at the situation up there, and our legislative session started yesterday, and in advance of it, the governor, who's a Democrat, knew that he's in some real trouble this way, and the top three people in social services resigned last week because they knew they were going to be held accountable.
Well, you know, the thing is that until the good people are willing to get in and work, and of course,
that's right.
The other side cheats. I mean, they consistently will cheat. They'll steal votes. They'll, my friend Bill Federer ran for Congress back there against Dick Gephardt. And, you know, they did everything dishonest they could.
By the way, Dick Gephardt brought felony assault charges against Bill Federer.
Right.
Because, you know, they were out videotaping him and so forth, and they claimed he assaulted, and they weren't able. The case has been in court this week, and in less than an hour, the jury came in not guilty.
Well, of course, the man who was supposedly assaulted was pushing the camera in Bill's face and getting
That's right.
his way, and he just happened to be on Dick Gephardt's staff.
That's right.
And they brought this case up during the trial, pardon me, during the campaign to discredit him. We've got Neil calling from Kennewick, Washington. Hi, Neil. How are you doing?
Just fine, Doc. Mr. Stormer, I read your book, None Dare Call It Treason, and right after it came out. But I want you to comment on passages in the Bible, Luke chapter 20, verse 24, where they're trying to trick Jesus. And he said, "Show me a penny. Whose image and superscription has it?" They answered and said, "Caesar's." But don't you think our money, our Caesar, is the Federal Reserve? That isn't our money.
Well,
private corporation.
Well, the question was, I mean, should we pay taxes? And, of course, if Jesus said, well, we should pay taxes, then the Jews would be mad at him. And if he said we shouldn't pay taxes, then the Roman government would be mad at him. And so his response was, well, give me a coin. Whose picture is on there?
And then he said, to Caesar the things that be Caesar's, and to God the things that be God's.
Right, of course, and Neil is just trying to bring a point out, of course, that we have an illegal monetary system because, of course, they have a privately owned central bank that, of course, determines the course of our monetary system. Would you like to touch on that at all, John?
Well, we can look at... I can give an hour speech on the three or four steps that led to the downfall of our republic, starting with the establishment of the civil service system back in the 1880s, and then government by regulatory commissions like the ICC and the FDA and some of those things. And as those bureaucracies started to grow, they needed money to finance them, so we got... The income tax, the 16th Amendment, and took away the right of the states to name their senators, and along just about the same time, there was a very dangerous two or three years there, 13, 14, 15, the Federal Reserve System was established, turning basically the control of our money over. That's a very important subject and a fascinating one, but you have to lay it out very, very carefully and step by step to give somebody an understanding.
I think, Neil, if you'll read my latest newsletter, my December newsletter, if you don't subscribe, we'll be glad to send you one, but just give us a call. But we go into the background of this, and we will give you a different slant on the central bank you've ever read before, okay?
Okay.
God bless. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Dr. Stan, you mentioned your newsletter, and you've brought it up a couple of times. And I would just say to your readers, or to your listeners tonight, to our listeners tonight, this is as well-researched. I stand in awe every month when I get it and see the research you've done and the documentation you have on the things that you say and giving the background of... how we've gotten where we are and where they want to take us.
Well, thank you for your words of encouragement. I read your newsletter, as I did this evening, and was just so impressed by what you had there. So it's good to know that you are reading it, and really, what a unique opportunity it is to be able to reach the people across America who can reach others. That's why I really write it, is because I know that you can reach others, and many of the people we send that to are reaching others. And these ideas are the spiritual battle behind everything. And of course,
right.
I know you know that, but an awful lot of people out there look upon this as a political battle, or as an ideological battle, or as a cultural battle. And it isn't. It's a spiritual battle being fought on the political, ideological, and cultural battlefield. And, if we just, why my posterity will just leave that one idea, that it'll be something I think that's well worthwhile. And I hope that my life will have been worth living. Understanding that we truly are involved in a spiritual battle today, and the forces behind everything going on are spiritual forces. So, would you like to tell the story that you told on this video? That is the one about the biblical foundation of our Declaration of Independence, about your meeting with the current president, George W. Bush. Of course, at that time, he was Governor George Bush.
That's right. I believe in September 99, a group of us had an opportunity to sit down. There were 14 people there, and spent about an hour and a half, almost 2 hours, with Governor Bush. We were trying to see where he stood and trying to have some influence with him. And as we went around the table and each person had opportunity to ask questions, when my turn came, I said, Governor, when you're elected president, you got to be positive, when you're elected president, you'll be asked to put your hand on the Bible and swear to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. And he said, yes. And I said, now my question is this. In preserving, protecting, and defending the Constitution of the United States, would you see it your duty to veto any appropriations for unconstitutional federal activities? And I said, now, that's kind of broad. It would actually be half the federal government, at least. So I said, I'll narrow it down. The Department of Education and the National Endowment for the Arts. I thought I'd make it really easy for them on that. That's the group that uses federal tax money to put crucifixes in jars of urine and all the rest. And I posed the question, and Mr. Bush said, well, how could we know if they're unconstitutional? And I allowed that Article 1, Section 8 spells it out rather definitely, what Congress can do and can't do. And Mr. Bush kind of stumbled around and mumbled a little bit, and finally, he said, well, you just got to be practical. And when the meeting broke up, he came over. He's a very personable guy. He came over, looked me in the eye, and said, you ask an awful good question. He said, I just didn't know how to handle it. And I was shocked. But, of course, the thing that was rather shocking to me was that there were 14 other people there, all of them Christian, conservative, good people, and there was only one other person in the room, I think, picked up on that and recognized the seriousness of it. And I was shocked, but then I had to realize that Mr. Bush's response would have been that of maybe at least the last six presidents of the United States. That's the thing that got me started asking lawyers and judges that question that we started out with. Did you actually read and study the Constitution? And across America, every policeman, every city council person, every person named to a school board, every person that goes into the military raises their hand and swears to uphold and protect the Constitution. And most of them have no idea what's in it.
And that's really why it's so important that we get these institutes on the Constitution set up across America. And if you're interested in doing that, you give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and we'll put you in touch with it. People who are organizing these. And do you know Michael or Stephen Perutka?
I sure do. They do tremendous work.
And, they had about, I think, 75 going across the country. And so I just started putting them on our programs regularly. And I talked to Michael about 2 weeks ago, and he said, we'd created a monster. He was having so many calls, he couldn't even answer them all. But he was so excited because we were going to set up another 2025 across America. And
series by John Eidsmo is great. And the only thing they still need on it is a copy of my video.
Well, I think that
maybe
we
can, program.
Well, I'll tell you what, maybe we can figure out a means of getting those to all of the, in fact, have you talked to Michael Perutka about that?
No, I haven't. I haven't had a chance to see him recently. I need to send him one of them, I guess.
Well, why don't you bring one next week, because we'll be meeting with him together when that mutual meeting we're going to.
He'll be
there.
He will be there. Yeah, he was supposed to be my guest at one occasion, and something interfered and wasn't able to come. So.
Okay. Well, we're just about out of time here. It's a fascinating experience. I appreciate so much you being with us. What's the message you'd like to leave with our listeners tonight?
Know what you believe. Determine what you believe based on the Bible. What you believe about politics and the family and all the problems we face. And distribute. Get the book, none dare call it education, out. Ask people to read it and give their opinion. A preacher's wife about 2 weeks ago told me, I read that book. I thought that couldn't be going on in our local school. She went down and found out it was. And before they got done, she got one of the teachers fired.
Well, I know. The two cases you sent me just arrived yesterday, so we have plenty of them on hand. And, John, thank you so very much for being with us. It's really appreciated, and I appreciate everything you do.
Always, always enjoy being with you.
Bye-bye. God bless you. All right, fine. Well, that was John Stormer, and I hope you enjoyed him. And I was sitting watching his video this afternoon and really thoroughly enjoying it. Even though I've heard him give the talk, I enjoy just watching the video. It's very well done. And we'll probably be carrying these later, but right now you can get them from John. Or if you want to know anything more, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And, of course, this is the time we're going to have to say goodbye to our listeners up there in the Northland. And, of course, if any of you have the Internet, you can hear our second hour at RadioLiberty.com. But right now we ask you to pray for America, because we're in real trouble. Pray for our leaders and for our ministers. But please remember to pray for revival, because if the American people don't turn back to God, God is going to turn his back on America forever. And finally, we ask you to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so, until tomorrow, when we'll be back with you with another fascinating program, Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you. Well, good evening again. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. We welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us this evening Bruce Adamson, and I've known Bruce, I guess, for well over a decade. Knew him before he ever got started on his crusade to determine who George de Moorenschelt was. And Bruce had an opportunity to win a lawsuit against the post office, I think it was, for discrimination. And instead of just taking the money and buying himself a fancy car and traveling around the world, he decided to do something with what he had gotten. And so he started traveling across America to find out who de Moorenschelt was. Now, de Moorenschelt was Lee Harvey Oswald's mentor. And, of course, you have to understand that unless the American people understand John Fitzgerald Kennedy was killed by our Central Intelligence Agency with the help of the FBI, and, of course, I'm not saying anybody in the CIA actually pulled the trigger, but certainly Lee Harvey Oswald was not a lone assassin, as the Warren Commission was so intent upon convincing us. Lee Harvey Oswald was set up. He was a CIA operative. Certainly de Moorenschelt was CIA, and Bruce has come up with all of the fascinating facts. He had the opportunity to get a copy of George de Moorenschelt's address book from the police force there in Florida, where after de Moorenschelt committed suicide or died from a shotgun blast. And so then using that address book, of course, here you find, well, I'm going to let Bruce tell this story because, of course, the ties in of de Moorenschelt with presidents of the United States, the CIA. Who were some of the names that you found in the address book, Bruce?
Lyndon Johnson.
Lyndon Johnson.
Philip C. Johnson, right above his name. And he's a famous architect and a trustee of the Museum of Modern Art. George H.W. Bush and his Zapata Oil Company and his nickname Poppy. One of the owners of CBS, the main owner, William S. Paley, was listed in there four times. Igor, Count and Countess Igor Cassini, and Mrs. Countess Cassini committed suicide because of Bob Kennedy. That was Charlene Reitzman, her maiden name, and they were Palm Beachers. And then Nelson Rockefeller's main man, Stanley Hope. The nephew of David Alfaro Siqueiros, who led the assassination attempt on Leon Trotsky way back in 1940, and that would be Jose Luis Siqueiros.
No, he didn't lead the assassination attempt. I mean, he killed him, didn't he?
No, he led the first attempt.
Oh, he was, I see.
With
there was
the gun, they tried to kill him, but he organized the final hit, which was Raymond McCotter.
Okay, fine. Well, so we won't get too far into that.
Yeah.
But here you're finding George Herbert Washaker book, Bush tied into de Moorenschelt, and Bruce even has a letter from the former president, the father of our current president, going into the fact that he knew de Moorenschelt. And, of course, de Moorenschelt was obviously tied in deeply to the FBI, to the CIA, as was George Herbert Walker Bush. People have forgotten, he was the director of the Central Intelligence Agency. His oil company was known as the Zapata Oil Company. And, of course, the Bay of Pigs failed attempt was Operation Zapata. In fact, one of the two boats that were there at the Bay of Pigs, what were their names?
The Barbara J. and the Houston.
And who is Barbara J.?
Well, Barbara J. Is probably the wife of George Bush's oil partner.
Right.
And that would be Edwin Pauley, who was Barbara Jane.
All right, fine. Anyway, of course, but tonight we were going to talk about Chuck Barris. And Chuck Barris is, he was a game show host, very, very prominent, worked for CBS, Mr. William Paley at CBS for many years. But he wrote a book back in the 1980s. And what was the title of the book? And it was about a CIA assassin.
It was called Confessions of a Dangerous Mind.
Why don't you tell us about the book? Why don't you tell us about Mr. Barris? And why, if this is important right now, of course, a movie's going to be coming out with George Clooney on this.
Yeah, January 17th. And, it kind of caught my attention. You know, I said Chuck Barris was, he doesn't want to talk about if he was really a CIA assassin or not. And so I said...
But in the course in the book, supposedly he killed all sorts of people.
Yeah, yeah, and he's kind of. I read the book in the last couple of days. Roughly, there's a lot of, dialogue and profanity, and I wrote down key names, and some of them are real people, like Leonard Goldberg of ABC, and he mentions Che Guevara, and his girlfriend was killed in a plane crash. Over Athens, Greece, and I found two plane crashes over Athens, Greece. I did this just in the last couple of days.
Well, basically, this is a book, supposedly, was a fictionalized account of his life, although he said it was fiction.
In 84 when he released it. Now he's not saying anything. He's kind of building up the suspense that maybe he was a CIA assassin.
Well, do you think he was a CIA assassin? He had strong ties to the Central Intelligence Agency, didn't he?
All of his game shows were not released by CBS. They were NBC and ABC, but that's okay. All the networks are controlled by the CIA, and CBS happened. I did the genealogical research on Chuck Barris, and that's where I heard that his relative, his father-in-law, was one of the founders of CBS, and I said, wait a minute, that's William S. Paley. Well, I was wrong. It wasn't William S. Paley. It was Leon Levy, L-E-V-Y, and his brother Isaac Levy. So Chuck married Lynn, and Lynn is short for Leon, and that's his daughter. And Leon married Blanche Paley, which is the sister of William S. Paley.
Now, wait a minute. Who was Chuck Barris married to?
Lynn Levy.
Lynn Levy, okay. So, what was the relationship between the Levys and the CIA?
Lynn Levy is the daughter of Leon Levy, and she is the niece of William S. Paley.
All right, so there is a tie-in then to Paley, who certainly is a key CIA figure, has been for...
Well, he admitted working with the CIA throughout the 50s.
And, of course, the CIA uses the major networks to control what the American people think. And, you know, all you have to do is realize that here we're going to have an attack on September 11th of the year 2001. And time perfectly to come out with that, suddenly there are all these new television programs about how good the CIA is, one there, the agency, which features on CBS. It's an excellent adventure program, but it's totally fiction. It makes the CIA look like such good guys trying to do such a good job. They are the major drug smugglers in the world today. And if you don't believe that, you need to get books like Drugging America or Defrauding America or the book entitled Into the Buzzsaw, which has an essay written by Gary Webb, who exposed the CIA drug involvement. And even the inspector general that invested the CIA concluded that their high officials were involved in drug smuggling, and they were covering for drug smugglers all over the world. So, of course, after we did away with the Taliban, why we got the drugs being grown again over there in Afghanistan, the largest supply of heroin for the European market. The Taliban had stopped the drugs. We killed them. Now, of course, the heroin's being grown again. But we justify that because we had to get Osama bin Laden, only we forgot to get Osama bin Laden. Somehow this man of mystery has managed to escape and elude the mightiest nation in the world, along with Muhammad Omar, whatever it is, Mullah Omar. And, but the drugs are flowing freely now, and now we're, of course, going to war with Iraq. But, you know, as you get into the background of this whole story of the Central Intelligence Agency, they've been involved with assassinations since their inception, haven't they, Bruce?
Excuse me?
The CIA has been involved with assassinations since their inception, haven't they? I mean,
oh, yeah.
Killing people.
Oh, yeah. That's no big surprise. And if they want to do dirty work, in the past, when they want to do dirty work, they use foreign people to come into the United States that really have no ties to our government.
Now, in other words, they hire professional assassins.
Yeah, they've got a history for that, and
well, we know that
Chuck Barris's uncle by marriage employed a CIA assassin, George DeMornschild.
Now, how do you know DeMornschild was an assassin? We know he was tied into the CIA, but how do we know?
Well, he wrote in his book, "Of course, I killed Kennedy from the biggest crook in the Western Hemisphere," and George DeMornschild, on the day he leaves to meet with Lyndon Johnson, 6 months before the assassination, his neighbor was burned in a fire, Professor Wolf, in Dallas, Texas.
Oh, no. Did DeMornschild actually say in his book, "Sure, I killed Kennedy"?
He says, his exact quote was, "Of course I killed Kennedy from the biggest crook in the Western Hemisphere."
Now, what does that mean, the biggest crook in the Western Hemisphere?
Well, of course I killed Kennedy. So you can make whatever you want out of it, but we know that William S. Paley employed DeMornschild because I have a letter from Paley's secretary for over 40 years telling me so.
All right, fine. So there's no question at all that this was a CIA hit, and we have a wonderful book called Regicide. It's written by Mr. Gregory Douglas, but the book is based upon the personal papers of Robert Crowley, who was the deputy director of covert operations for the CIA. And when he was dying, he turned his papers over to Mr. Douglas, and of course there it tells why the CIA decided Kennedy had to be killed, and of course they went to the mafia, and the mafia said they weren't they were dishonest, but they weren't crazy. And Sam Giancana referred them to the Sicilian Mafia, who referred them to the Marseillais Mafia, who sent the assassins to kill the American president. But, of course, you couldn't have covered this up without the full cooperation of the CIA and J. Edgar Hoover, director of the FBI, who hated the Kennedys because they had embarrassed him because he'd refused to go after the Mafia. And he didn't go after the Mafia because they had pictures of him in full drag. He was a homosexual. His closest friend was Roy Cohn, who was a homosexual. And, of course, Hoover hated the Kennedys and went right along with the murder. And, of course, they had I think it was a man named Sullivan. Mr. Sullivan was the go-between between Hoover and the CIA. And, of course, there was eventually a falling out between Mr. Sullivan and Mr. Hoover, and Mr. Sullivan retired and was promptly shot on the front door of his house because somebody thought he was a deer. And so he was not there to tell the story, but Mr. Crowley did tell the story. And the fact that you're not ever hearing about this book simply reflects the degree of control that exists today over what the American people think. So the whole program tonight was going to be talking about Chuck Barris, and the fact that he wrote this book about being an assassin. Now, at the time when he came out with the book, did he say it was totally fiction, or was it based at least in part on his own experience? Do we have any idea what he said about this?
In the book, he says his first interview was in January of 1963, which is before the assassination of Kennedy, and it was right about the time his uncle by marriage was employing DeMornschild, according to John Minnery.
Now, but who was he being interviewed by?
The CIA.
He was being interviewed and was he being asked to join the CIA?
Yeah. Well, yeah, and he thought it was going to be exciting. But I don't think he... this is... now, in contemporary authors, he mentions that the book is fiction. But now that the movie's released, he's kind of playing along like, you know, it's... He's not going to talk about the CIA.
Well, because the thing is that when you join the CIA, you sign a statement that you will never publish anything without their permission. So the only thing he could do would be to publish something written as fiction, which they, of course, couldn't control.
Yeah, in the book he mentions that he was threatened by the CIA and that you know, they tried to intimidate him not to publish the book. But he doesn't mention his family ties to the CIA.
All right. In other words, in the book, which is not part of the fiction part, he says he was threatened by the CIA as far as writing it?
Yeah. He said that they were going to, he was intimidated that they were going to, you know, make threats on his life, a couple threats.
No, of course, but this is what they do, and they actually kill people. I personally talked to L.D. Brown, who was a state trooper in Arkansas, who was hired by the CIA to be an assassin. His job was to go to Mexico and to kill a Mexican drug dealer. At
they
least he thought it was a Mexican drug dealer. It turned out to be an American. It turned out to be an American author. It turned out to be an American author who'd written a book about George Bush and Bill Clinton called Compromise, which we carried until recently. Of course, we could still probably get the book if anybody wanted it. And, of course, at that time, L.D. Brown backed away. And I've talked to him. He won't do any more radio programs, I suppose. Maybe they gave him an offer he couldn't refuse. Because, of course, people who talk too much in this country are killed. And you say that couldn't happen in America. Why couldn't it? I mean, we're going to have a preemptive war with Iraq. We've already had a war with Afghanistan to capture Osama bin Laden, dead or alive. And now we've forgotten about Osama bin Laden. It's the wickedest Saddam Hussein. And, of course, we forgot about him because the media has forgotten about him. They focus our attention. If you control ABC and CBS and NBC, if you look at this book, Regicide, you'll find a list of the names of CIA assets for Mr. Crowley. It's amazing how many of them work for ABC, CBS, and NBC, including my former next-door neighbor here in Santa Cruz, who I assume was keeping a good eye on me. I know I was approached back in about 1962 and asked if I would join an intelligence organization, and the name, it was Fly to Washington, D.C., and I don't remember whether the name was Polly or Paley, who I was to meet.
Well, there, probably it could have been William Pauley, P-A-W-L-E-Y.
I don't remember.
Or it could be Edwin Pauley.
I never could keep those two names straight.
Oh, that's...
Fortunately, I didn't accept that. All he wanted me to do was just make reports on the cocktail parties I attended, the people I met, what people were saying. They were spying on America in 1962. But, of course, most Americans don't know that.
Well,
Well, anyway, do you think that Chuck Barris now had strong ties to this whole intelligence network, didn't he?
He seems like he could have been a CIA agent, but he kind of seems like too nice of a guy to be an assassin. You know, I really don't buy that, but he may have known of people in the CIA that were assassins. And he kind of like didn't like it. That's what I'm kind of getting from the gist of his book, that he kind of like he didn't really approve it, you know, of their killing people, and he wanted out, and they threatened him that he couldn't get out, and you know, I didn't. There's you know, there's just a lot to it. Like his, like I just think it's important though that his uncle was a CIA employer and allowed the CIA to go into CBS.
Well, of course, we know from the Church Committee hearings in 1973 that the Central Intelligence Agency had killed Patrice Lumumba. They'd had him killed, Trujillo of the Dominican Republic, Mr. Diem and Mr. Nu over in Vietnam. And, of course, there's no question in my mind at all that they were deeply involved with the murder of an American president. But, of course, they operate above and beyond the law. And they're still operating in Afghanistan today. In fact, I just got an article out of the paper, you know, that they're over there directing so much of the military operations going on over there. Now, you think this is a military operation? It is not. It is a CIA operation. The Afghan War in the 1980s was a CIA operation. The Vietnam War, the CIA got us into that. And there were the CIA operatives there long before our troops were committed.
And that's kind of what's wrong with this country, is that they're not held accountable by anyone. Congress, the Senate, nobody has control over them. Nobody can police the CIA. And, you know, they have all these people working together, and nobody knows what the next person is doing. You know, they're just told to do their part. And, you know, whoever's at the top making the decisions is not being held accountable. And they never were held accountable for what they pulled off with President Kennedy, and That's the bottom line. You want accountability. You don't want a police sergeant in Santa Cruz hiring his family members, knocking off criminals just because he thinks it's right.
Well, of course, the president now has given them the right to kill anybody that they feel is a terrorist. Well, people don't know what Operation Phoenix was. Do you know what Operation Phoenix was, Bruce? Did you ever study that? Well, this was over in Vietnam. And
no, I don't.
This was a CIA operation. I've talked to several people who were part of this. And basically, it was to kill any Vietnamese civilian who didn't approve of what we were doing and who might possibly be sympathetic to the North Vietnamese. Well, a lot of Vietnamese over there who didn't want us there, who felt that we were like the French coming in. We weren't there necessarily to help them. We were there to push our own political and economic agenda. So they would oppose us. And, of course, to kill these people, they actually hired assassins. And they would go out and, all you had to do was report somebody. They were a Viet Cong sympathizer, and they could go out and kill them. They weren't brought in. They weren't tried. They were simply killed, and you got paid if you brought in the right ear. Well, a lot of times people would report somebody they didn't like, a neighbor they didn't like, or maybe a fellow was dating a girl that they wanted. And so they'd report him, and they'd be authorized, and they'd be given a couple of $100 for killing him and bringing in the right ear on them. 40,000 to 60,000 Vietnamese were killed that way in Operation Phoenix, and they, of course, had to keep that secret from the American people because, after all, we didn't want to think that our leaders would do that sort of thing. But they did, and they authorized it. Now, the military, it was carried out primarily by CIA, but they used our military. The military believed we were over there fighting for America, fighting communism, and a lot of them went along with it initially. And I think after a while they began to understand that they were involved in something that was totally evil. And I know Colonel Tom McKinney, who was the colonel, Marine Corps colonel over there. We've talked to him about it. He was assigned to them. And in fact, he was given the job. He was told to kill Bobby Garwood. He was assigned that job. And fortunately, he never found him, or he would have killed him. Bobby Garwood was accused of being a Marine deserter. He wasn't. The government knew he wasn't, but they wanted him killed because it was an embarrassment to them. And of course, Colonel McKinney believed what they were doing initially. He believed they were fighting communism over there, fighting for America. And then suddenly the realization, it was all a lie. We never were there fighting communism. We were there simply for entirely different purposes. And all these people were slaughtered. And the Operation Phoenix, there are a few books that have been written about it. And one of these days I'd love to put together a four-tape set. I don't know whether people want to hear it. We put together a four-tape set on Operation Tailwind, which was where we sent the troops in to kill American deserters and to use sarin gas on the Viet Cong. And, of course, we have all the documentation, the interviews with the people who were there, even the testimony of Admiral Thomas Moore. And, of course, nobody's really interested in that. They're not interested in the fact it really was true. We did kill our own deserters. And the thing is, it wasn't even a war. So how could you justify that? Why not capture them and bring them back to stand trial? And they were simply shot down. And, of course, what happens when a country begins to violate its own laws and is being covered up by an agency which is above the law, and that's what the CIA is. The CIA is not answerable to anybody in Congress, not answerable to the people that pay their salaries, and of course they finance so much of what they do by drug operations. That's a pretty terrible thing to say, isn't it, Bruce?
Yeah. Yeah, there's some, I think murder is not a good thing, and to make a movie that promotes assassins for the CIA, it's like saying, well, I haven't seen the movie, and I bet it's probably going to be a good movie. I like the cast, and...
No, of course, is George Clooney an assassin, or is he a recruiter?
He's a recruiter.
He recruits assassins.
He's Jim Byrd.
Right.
And he recruits Chuck Barris, and Chuck Barris is played by Rockwell. You know, I think it's going to be a good movie. Whether, I don't know what the angle is, if they're encouraging, employment of CIA assassins, then you have to wonder. You look at George Clooney's previous movies, and in the movie Three Kings, he he's fighting for George Bush, President George Bush, and that's senior. And then he's in.
Is that the one where it's taking place in southern Iraq, where they're going?
Yeah, they're over the oil fields. I believe it's over the oil fields. And there's another movie he was in about the or came out the same year as the 1993 bombing of the Trade Towers. And Terror in the Towers, 93.
Well, actually, George Clooney has done some very interesting films. And there's one film I saw where, and I thought that was Three Kings, I'm not sure exactly the title of it, but they were out looking for a treasure that was in southern Iraq.
I think that's it, yeah. That's one where they're fighting for George Bush.
But the interesting thing was that the point that they brought out, which the average American doesn't understand, is that during the closing days of the Gulf War, President Bush went on radio and television and beamed it into Iraq and said to the Shiites in the south and the Kurds in the north, you rise up and overthrow Saddam Hussein and we're going to come in and we're going to get him out of office and you're going to be free. And those stupid people believed George Herbert Walker Bush. And they rose up. And, of course, we abandoned them, and they were slaughtered by Saddam's troops. And then after they'd slaughtered hundreds of thousands of them, both north and south, then we set up the no-fly zones. Initially, we allowed him to take his helicopter gunships in there and machine gun whole cities and whole communities of these foolish people who'd believed the American president. And remember, when the American president speaks, he speaks for you and I. And men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. And, of course, no one ever held him responsible. And we never talk about that anymore, the fact that he promised them. He gave them the word of the United States. And do you really think that the Iraqi people will ever again believe anything an American president says? In 1995, the Iraqi military tried to overthrow Saddam Hussein, foolishly again trying to contact the CIA, hoping they would have our support. And once again, we betrayed them. That's covered in a book called See No Evil by Robert Byrd, a CIA agent in northern Iraq in 1995. In fact, in that, he says that there are an awful lot of people in Iraq today who believe that Saddam Hussein is a CIA operative. Now, I'm not suggesting that's true. I'm saying that an awful lot of Iraqi people believe the CIA kept him in power and he's still working for them. I find that hard to believe. But who knows what's really going on, or maybe he is part of this whole spiritual hierarchy that we talk about, or controlled by the spiritual hierarchy, because nothing that's going on over there today makes any sense at all. I mean, I would think Saddam Hussein would say, look, take my country, give me an opportunity to go live on the Riviera, and you can have the whole country. Why would he want to plunge that country into war? Why wouldn't he simply do everything he could to prevent the horrible things which are going to occur if we do invade that country? And the CIA, we know, is over there working today, working behind the scenes, and not working at all to put down Saddam Hussein. So now, is the new movie getting much of a play, Bruce?
I haven't really seen the movie. It's going to be released in about 10 days. The 17th, and I just kind of looked at Chuck Barris's uncle by marriage, who was Paley, and then I found that one of the longest directors of the company was Prescott Bush, beginning in 1930 to 1952 when he became a senator.
Now, what company are you speaking of now?
The CIA's CBS.
Okay, in other words, Prescott Bush was the director of CBS, which was under the control of the CIA at the time.
Yeah, and I have, he left in 52, and he was also working at Harriman and Brown Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
And 6 months before the assassination, George de Mornschild, who had lousy credit, goes into Harriman and Brown Brothers and gets a $300,000 line of credit from Prescott Bush's banking firm.
Well, that's you got to like somebody an awful lot before you give them $300,000 line of credit, and especially when they don't have anything to their name.
Right, and I just thought that was an interesting twist, because I have actual letters between Prescott Bush and CIA Director Alan Dulles and Warrant Commissioner Alan Dulles.
Well, of course, that's one thing that Bruce does. He's an excellent genealogist and researcher, and Just a matter of putting all the dots together. We'll be right back here in just 3 minutes. We'll welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when we have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported. And, hey, if you are out there in the listening audience and you're listening to us and you think that we have real problems as a country and you'd like to become a part of the Radio Liberty family and help us as we reach out 5 hours every day, 5 days a week, and now we're doing a Saturday program. It's heard on 35, 36 stations, and then we're doing another Saturday program about half the time here in the Monterey Bay area on the KSCO, covering when Tom Quinn is away. We have an opportunity to reach out, but it's an expensive proposition to do what we do. And so if you believe that there's a problem and you're willing to help us do what we do, we hope that many of you will decide right now you're going to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And simply give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. If you'd like a free copy of our newsletter, our December newsletter deals with the current monetary system. And unless you understand the monetary system and what's happening, you very possibly will lose everything you own. And I'm talking about your home, your car, your bonds, your pension, your annuities, your insurance. This is all going to be destroyed if things go the way I fear that they're going. And, of course, if they, in an effort to get out of the impossible situation we're in today, turn on the printing presses, or people throughout the world begin to lose confidence in the American dollar, which is the reserve currency, and begin flooding the money back into this country. That may very well be why they're coming up with a new colored currency. You see, we're dealing with very smart people who know exactly what's happening, and they are, of course, coming up with alternative plans. And why are they coming out with the colored money now? Well, they say, you can just counterfeit this money if you've got a colored printer. Well, you try counterfeiting money and putting that little band that's in there, the numbered little band and the watermarks. I mean, how many of you honestly believe that you can make a counterfeit effective money with your copy machine? You can't do it. And of course, there is a magnetic strip in the bills. They don't need the colored money, except that they know something's going to happen, and they're making their preparations for it. But the last thing they want is for the American people to understand, because only those who understand will be able to make any preparations and survive the coming period of turmoil and chaos that lies ahead. So, if you'd like to better understand the occult foundation of our nation's monetary system, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. We'll be glad to send you a copy of our newsletter. And, of course, we hope you'll go to our website, pull down our other newsletters. And, of course, we hope you'll pull down our programs on a regular basis. Of course, if you listen 5 hours a day, you won't get anything accomplished, but you'll certainly have a lot of information. But encourage others to listen an hour or two a day, understand what's going on, and then help us to get the truth out across America. And believe me, we are. I talked to a gentleman today in Georgia, and some little station there is pulling down and broadcasting our Genesis program. He rebroadcasts our programs in his area with a micro station. This is happening all across the country. Small stations, independent stations, pulling down our programs, and the word is beginning to spread. I'm encouraged, and I hope you are too. We have so much to be thankful for. And so as long as God allows us to, we should continue circulating the information, and hopefully we'll play a part in whatever God's plan is for America. Again, our telephone number, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because we are at war today. Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and our guest this evening is Bruce Adamson. And Bruce, of course, has spent the last, about 8 years, Bruce?
No, I'm going on 11 now.
Is it 11 years? Because I knew you even before you got started on that. So yeah. I guess I've known you an awful long time. Anyway, really studying, 11 years studying Demornschild. And we're going to tell you in just a few minutes how to get his material. He's written, 12 or 13 or 14 books? How many?
I had some help and computer help, and I have all 14 volumes now on CD, which has allowed me to cut the cost.
Fine. We can't talk about how much it's going to be. But anyway, you can go to our website at radioliberty.com, and there's a direct link to Bruce's website, and you can learn all about that.
So they can get it right from you, and I contribute for every cell.
We appreciate any help you can give us.
Yeah.
Anyway, go to our website, and you can either call our 800 number, and we can put you in touch with Bruce, or go to our website. There's a link there to Bruce, and you'll find out about the CD. And then, of course, you've got it all in CD. And so, although the books really are very attractively done and very nicely done, I'm really quite impressed by them.
Well, one thing about the CD now is that, you know, it's been really frustrating since '96 trying to do it on my own to publish the books, because I have to bind them and I make photocopies, and the quality is not all that good. It's good, but it's not as good. But when I sell it on a CD, they can print their own copies and it comes out like a picture, you know, and they can read it at their leisure, and it'll be on computer. If they want to search a name in one of the volumes, they just do a keyword search and they can go to any place in that document and find that person's name and how they're connected to George de Mornschild, and also in the JFK timeline, which is 300 pages. So they're getting 1,800 pages, and because I don't have to do the binding and all the paper, all the photocopying up front, it really has reduced the cost. And I put over $150,000 of my own money into the 14 volumes, and it's just rewarding to know that it's getting better.
It really is, and so fascinating information. All the relationships between de Mornschild and all of these people who played such an important part in the murder of an American president, and they got away with it stock-free. I mean, the American people, so many of them honestly believe what the Warren Commission said. Now, to the American people's credit, I think more and more people are beginning to realize that there really was a conspiracy, and all they have to do is visualize the so-called magic bullet that not only kept veering and going at right angles to itself in its trajectory, but reconstituted itself, and after leaving shrapnel and lead in Governor Connally, in his chest and in his right wrist and his left thigh, go ahead and miraculously reconstituted itself. There are very few bullets that can do that, and comes out in pristine condition, laying on the gurney next to Governor Connally there in the Parkland the hospital emergency room. So anybody who really believes that's what happened, why, of course, you probably believe there's good justification for going to war with Iraq at the present time. You probably will believe whatever you are told. But if you stop and think about it, bullets don't reconstitute themselves. They don't go one direction, take a right angle turn, and take another right angle turn. They just don't do that. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, certainly there were so many relationships between de Mornschild and the CIA, and so had strong ties to George Herbert Walker Bush. What were the ties between de Mornschild and George Herbert Walker Bush, other than the fact that you found his the president's telephone number, his nickname, and his address in de Mornschild's telephone book?
Which was entered between 1954 and 55, and it was a year after the Zapata Oil Company was founded. And it was a year after I have letters from CIA Director Alan Dulles to Prescott Bush and Neil Mellon that their Caribbean project is going very well.
Now, of course, Prescott Bush is the grandfather of our president today,
right?
The father of George Herbert Walker Bush. All of them have been members of the Skull and Bones. I think there are seven or eight members of the Bush family that have come from this secret occult society where they eat their meals off of a Nazi silverware, and they have all the...
It's hard to believe that be a Christian and be a Skull and Bones member.
Well, you would think that if you were a Christian, you would renounce your your membership and your ties to Skull and Bones, but it's interesting that the new head of the SEC, Mr. Donaldson, just happens to be a Skull and Bones member. And no sooner was the president of the White House that he invited all the members of his Skull and Bones class to the White House to celebrate with him. So, you know what, I think it shows very, very poor judgment to maintain a relationship to a secret occult Luciferian society, you know, once you have really had a born-again experience. So, of course, there are many other issues here. We know that
Some of the connections that you wanted to know about DeMarshall and Bush is that DeMarshall's best friend at Andover and at Yale was a New York's, not then, but way back in the early, late 30s and 40s, was Edward Gordon Hooker, but later became a member of the New York Stock Exchange. And Edward Gordon Hooker is a cousin to Blanche Rockefeller. And Edward Gordon Hooker was the step-nephew of George DeMarshall. And Edward Gordon Hooker, during the 1950s, according to Dimitri von Marnschild, who died at the age of 100 last year, or June of 2002, told me that Hooker and DeMarshall had their own oil company, which was run out of a CIA trust building in Dallas, and that was the Dallas Republic National Bank building.
Now, was that Dimitri DeMarnschild or was that George DeMarnschild who had the oil company?
It was George, but Dimitri told me that George was in business with Edward Gordon Hooker, who would have been his stepson. And another interesting tie, I think I brought this out on one of your previous shows, is that in the 1930s, long before women were allowed into the Royal Garter, the Order of the Royal Garter, Dimitri married a Betty Cartwright, who is the mother of Edward Gordon Hooker. And she was a companion of the Royal Garter way back in the 1930s when women were not allowed.
But by a companion of the Royal Garter, what does that mean?
I guess it's like you're escorted by one of the members.
All right, of course. Now, of course, women can join, and I believe that Margaret Thatcher is a member of this occult organization.
And, and she also has CIA and MI6 ties, too.
Yes, I'm speaking of Margaret Thatcher.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
You know, of course, it's amazing how our perception is created by the media. We have actually some pages out of a book written by James H. Billington, who is the current Librarian of Congress, a book he had written. And he's talking about, he's been over in Moscow, he's been visiting the communists there. Of course, he's a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, and CFR members and the communists get along very well. In fact, the Council on Foreign Relations has the copy of their magazine. The most treasured possession is the copy of Foreign Affairs magazine that they published that was read by Lenin, and it's there under glass in the headquarters of the CFR at 5080 68th Street in New York City. But Billington is traveling to the airport with a high official in the Communist Party who says, well, you know, everything was going well in Russia until Gorbachev went to London and was indoctrinated into a secret Masonic lodge by Margaret Thatcher. Now, that's what James H. Billington says in his book, and he's a Librarian of Congress. Nobody would ever accuse him of being a right-winger. So here's Margaret Thatcher.
He is CIA, though.
He's CIA. Well, he may very well be.
And he was also friends with
How do you know he's CIA?
Because I know his personnel file. He's in my book.
He is in your book?
Yes.
And you have his personnel file?
I have letters between him and Alan Dulles. He was coaching Alan Dulles on how to run the Warren Commission, and he was friends with Dimitri and George DeMarnschild.
This is James H. Billington?
Yeah, yeah. That's why, you know, you never know how people are tied together, and only when you know the ties does it really become important.
Well, now you say he's CIA. Does he actually...
No, he was employed by the CIA.
Oh, he was employed by the CIA.
Yeah, in the 50s.
Was he a member of the CIA or just employed by them?
Employed.
Okay, fine. He was employed by the CIA. Anyway, he wrote a book pointing out that Gorbachev was indoctrinated into a secret Masonic lodge by Margaret Thatcher. Now, most people believe that Margaret Thatcher is a born-again Christian. She professes to be. Apparently, she can give the most wonderful, wonderful talk. And yet, of course, why would she join a secret Masonic lodge? Why would she join the occult Order of the Garter, which the whole foundation is in the occult? And so there's so many unanswered questions there that nobody ever wants to ask, and certainly nobody ever wants to answer. And
I'll give you a good company to look at. and you'll see CIA British intelligence all over it, and it's out of Canada. And they own, I think it's the Chicago Sun-Times or the Mirror, and that's Conrad Black's company, Argus, Hollinger and Argus. You've got Henry Kissinger on the board, Margaret Thatcher, Giovanni Agnelli, William F. Buckley Jr.
Is that Fiat?
Yeah, Fiat. Yeah.
Right.
Who's buying up the water rights. So is the Bush family buying up the water rights in Felton. Margaret Thatcher, and Prince, I think Prince Charles, well, he's very good friends with Conrad Black.
But he is, yeah, he's not necessarily on the board.
Or no, but there's a couple other interesting characters on the board there, at Hollinger and Argus, LTD, and they own the Chicago Sun, is it the Sun Mirror or something like, one of the biggest newspaper in Chicago, and Conrad Black owns like owned over 400 newspapers. I think he just sold them. But he was very good friends with Prince Charles and parades with Queen Elizabeth. And he sent his writers to investigate what I was doing on George de Moorenschild. In fact, George de Moorenschild's friend was Conrad Black's mentor.
Now, wait a minute. You said that he sent people to investigate you?
Yeah, yeah. And they wrote me letters that they wanted to buy my volumes. Julian Feldman in Ontario, Canada.
Yeah, they wanted to buy copies. They wanted to buy the rights to them.
No, they wanted to buy copies.
I see. Okay.
And they were going to. They wrote an article in the Saturday Night magazine, and they used all my material and didn't give me any credit.
Oh, I try. Well, did they tell the truth?
No, they put a spin on it, like they were trying to smear Muhammad Al-Fayed to make Muhammad Al-Fayed look bad because he's meeting with George de Moorenschild and having an affair with George de Moorenschild's daughter.
Now, for the listeners out there, Al-Fayed, of course, is the man who owns Harrods, and it was his son who was killed along with Princess Di, is that right?
Right.
Okay, and so, but many, many years previously, he was in Haiti having an affair with de Moorenschild's daughter. About what year was that?
It was right after the assassination.
Okay, and that would be 64 then.
Right, and he's pretending to be a Kuwaitian, when in reality he is Egyptian, born in Cairo, and he's representing El Admir Atta, which is the same name as the father of the head hijacker who crashes into the tower.
Because we don't know whether it's the same Atta.
Well, it's the same name. We know that, but we don't know if it's the same person.
Okay, fine. So, of course...
But they're both from the same town, Cairo, Egypt, and they're both pretending to be Kuwaitian when they're not. So, to me, that, and they're working with a guy who was a CIA agent, George de Moorenschild.
Well, that's a lot of strange things, and I wish we had a couple of $1 million. We could just put you out there getting all this information together. So they actually used your information, and what they were trying to do was to discredit this this gentleman who owns Herod, the father of the young man who was killed along with Princess Di, because he was trying to get the information that the CIA had on Princess Di.
Right.
And, of course, the CIA had, I don't know, what, 1,000 pages?
1,100. They were telling Princess Diana at the time of the death in the tunnel. And what's really weird is that the a miniature Statue of Liberty in honor of the United States is right above where she was killed in the tunnel.
Is that close to the Seine River?
I don't know what the tunnel's... I'm not good with these French names.
All right, because I remember last when I was in Paris 50 years ago, it just seems like that, not that long ago, and I remember seeing a miniature statue of Liberty close to the Seine River there. But anyway...
It probably is, and I was told that they had cameras set up in front of the tunnel, but no one ever brought out the film. So, but...
Well, there's something very strange about the death of Princess Di.
Well, and that's what was interesting.
She was a couple of blocks away from a hospital, and it took them, half an hour to get there?
It took them an hour and 50 minutes. Right. And in comparison to the shooting that you had in Oregon, there was a hospital 26 miles away, and they got all 26 people that were shot by this kid to the hospital in the same time that it took them to get Princess Diana to the hospital.
Right. Well, first, the thing is that the CIA refuses to release their records. Now, first of all, why is the CIA keeping records on Prince's dime.
And the Pentagon.
Right. And of course, why then would they refuse to release him? She's dead now. What possible harm could it do? And of course, the father believes that the CIA was involved in that. And
British intelligence.
Right. And of course, if there's nothing to conceal, why do they conceal it?
And what's interesting, too, is that he lost his lawsuit 2 months before the September 11th crash. And on July 13th of last 2001 it was. And then what's really interesting is that, you know, he lost his son in that crash. And if he really believed that the Pentagon and the CIA was behind it, then he has a vendetta. There's something anger there. I would be angry. I mean, if that was my blood. And then you look at his brother-in-law, who happened to be the richest man in the world in the 1970s and 80s, was Anand Khashoggi. And Anand Khashoggi was George Bush Sr.'s main man and the personal advisor to the Saudi royal family for Iran-Contra. He's the missile man, Anand Khashoggi. And he lost a nephew with Princess Diana. And if he believes that the CIA and the Pentagon were behind it, then you have a direct tie from Bush to people that want to get even with the United States for killing their blood.
Well, that's an interesting theory.
And then you look at El Amir Atta, the father of Muhammad Atta. If that's the same man, why isn't there an investigation on that?
Well, why is our government doing everything they can to block an investigation of the Saudi connection to the 15 hijackers who came from Saudi Arabia? And, of course, the families of the bereaved families of these victims of 9/11 have brought a lawsuit against the Saudi Arabians. Now, if there's nothing to it, it'll come out in court.
Well,
but instead of allowing the court proceedings to progress, instead of allowing the lawyers to take depositions and collect information, the Bush administration has done everything they can to block that investigation. Now, if the Saudis were really involved in the murder of 3,000 Americans, we should know that. The American people should know it. If they're not, they should know it as well. So why block the investigation? Why set up a phony commission where the president appoints the head of the commission to find out what the president knew ahead of time?
A friend of George de Moinshield, Henry Kissinger.
Right. Oh, no, it was de Moinshield, close to Kissinger as well?
Yes. And so was Dimitri, his brother.
Well, so Henry Kissinger is, of course, into everything bad, isn't he?
Yeah, he's with that Hollinger, Conrad Black's company. He's not a $200 billion corporation for nothing. He is really one of the worst people, a member of the Bohemian Club. And I'm not putting everything down about that, but I just...
I would put everything down about it. It's a secret occult society and where they have naked dancing and these leaders of the Western world are participating in naked dancing and running around. And, you know, the things that go there are just unbelievable. The sexual excesses, the homosexuality, and the sexual heterosexual promiscuity. And we have a 4-tape set on the Bohemian Grove.
I've never been there, so I don't know.
Well, I haven't been invited either. But we have actually two people who are there and another woman who has studied this extensively for 30 years. And that 4-tape set on the Bohemian Grove, there's nothing like it. But of course,
I have a cousin that was a member, and he told me that that he thought Kissinger was a wimp, and you know that he would come around with his helicopter and land there like he was big stuff, you know. And I don't understand how he can get an award by the Queen of England for being one of the best speakers in English when he can barely understand what he's saying.
Well, because the Queen of England is part of this whole occult world movement, and it is her Order of the Garter, or at least the her organization there, that is one of the key secret occult movements in the whole world. And people don't understand what the Order of the Garter is, but this goes back to the 1300s, and it was formed by the Black Prince, who was a Satanist, and it has been operating ever since then. And that's why you'd find people like Winston Churchill there. Winston Churchill was a Mason. He was a Druid. And, of course, if you study the history of the First World War, the story of the invasion of Gallipoli. And at Gallipoli, as I remember, there were, 150,000 British troops fell in battle, 150,000 Turks. Absolutely absurd. There was no reason for the invasion at all, unless you wanted to kill an awful lot of people. Because even if the British had been able to get a foothold there, there was no place to go. You'd be right there on the beaches, exactly as it was at the Bay of Pigs. But Churchill was the High Lord of the Admiralty, and he wanted that. And then, of course, having talked to General Wedemeyer, who was chief of planning during the Second World War. And General Wedemeyer, when I spent several weekends with him, said he never could understand why Churchill insisted on the invasion of North Africa. There was absolutely no reason to invade North Africa. He should have gone directly at Europe. Why waste men? And of course, there, just bypass North Africa. Let the Germans have it, but strike at the heartland of Germany, and the troops there would be cut off without supplies. But Churchill insisted on that. And Churchill, of course, blocked any effort to come to an early end to the war. And time and again, the German hierarchy and military tried to surrender. And Churchill and Franklin Delano Roosevelt would not hear that. And Richard Mayberry, in his early warning letter of recently, I think it was just a couple of months ago, said, after studying the history of the Second World War, the only conclusion he could come to, because a million people were dying every month, that there was a thing, and he capitalized T and thing, out there that wanted to see death and destruction. And if you want that copy of that, it's really chilling to think of it. Of course, I know what it's talking about. It is not an abstract thing. It is Satan himself, who I believe is manipulating so much of the havoc that's going on today. Well, Bruce, we're about out of time. If you would like to get Bruce's material, why, go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. You can link to his website or give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. That is, of course, the CD we're talking about.
1,800 pages, and I've won cases. I won a case against the FBI, the CIA, and Freedom Information Act, and over 150,000 in 10 years of my life invested into it. So it all comes on a CD, and it's been cut way down, and it's much easier for me. I can go to the post office, and instead of carrying 25 pounds of books, I can carry this little envelope, and
it's all there.
It's there.
Okay, fine. Well, if you're out there in the listening audience and would like to get it, give us a call. And then, Bruce, do you have a parting thought for our listeners tonight?
Well, I would just, Chuck Barris, I would just mention that his brother-in-law was Robert Paley Levy, named in honor of his uncle by marriage, who was a CIA employer at CBS and the head of CBS. And he should have brought this out in his book if he really wanted to be on the up and up. And but I just think that there's nothing glorious about a CIA assassin. But on the other hand, it may be a good movie, and it may bring more attention to the fact that they do have this type of behavior going on. So I can't be too high of a critic, you know what I mean? I can't criticize it too much because I haven't seen it.
Let's wait till we see the movie, and maybe we'll do another program. Thanks so much for being with us tonight.
Bye-bye.
Okay, and fine. And of course, the movie is A Dangerous Mind, and it's the story of Chuck Barris. Well, it's been an interesting evening. Hope you've enjoyed it. We ask you to pray for America and pray for revival, because if the American people don't turn back to God, God is going to turn his back on this country forever. And then, of course, we ask you to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. And so until tomorrow at the same time, Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you.
in the ring, huh?
Yeah, I thought for sure we'd make it to plenty of time to spare, and then when I left this morning, check the weather, and then we're up at the Mackerel convention.
At the what?
Mackerel. Because I work on Macintosh computers.
Oh, I see, okay.
Right, that's the annual meeting, and it's probably going to be the last one.
Why is that?
Just because changing economy, there's hardly anybody there.
Really?